This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the Worldwide Wave.
This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. My name's Matt. And spaced out across Melbourne, I'm joined tonight on the panel by Ian.
Hello there.
And Stefan.
Good evening. In uncertain times, people crave leadership. They gravitate to people who are direct, honest, and willing to put others' needs ahead of themselves. Today is Transgender Day of Visibility, and we thought tonight we would showcase some of the incredible, inspiring trans leaders from across the globe.
We'll bring interviews from some of the outstanding trans warriors around the world, like India's first trans politician, Apsara Reddy, Amani Da Silva, a trans activist leading the charge for change in the Central African country of Angola, and a group of trans trailblazers who took on the might of the US military and won. Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
I managed to reach a point, you know, where I can use my own experience not only to empower the community, but also to re-educate society in general. So being transsexual and to have worked on TV, to work in the model industry, it's something that I use to actually empower other members of the community that we can be whatever we want to be.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week, like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
It was less than 2 years ago that homosexuality was still illegal under colonial-era sodomy laws. Now the Indian Parliament is discussing a bill to give rights and protections to its transgender community. There's no person better qualified to speak about this topic than Apsara Reddy. She is the first transgender politician in the Indian National Congress Party. Apsara now spends her time working with the All Indian Mahila Congress, the women's wing of the Indian National Congress, one of the largest political parties in the country. We asked her when we spoke to her how she found her way into politics and her opinion about the new Indian Transgender Protection Bill.
I was a trained journalist. I worked with organizations like the BBC. I worked with organizations in Australia, in India, national dailies, English dailies. I never really planned politics. For me, journalism happened, and from journalism, I was invited by a really big network in India to do a television chat show with celebrities, and I think I did that. And then I was spotted by various powerful politicians and offered roles in political parties, which I became the official national official spokesperson for English media for a channel, for a political party in Tamil Nadu, in the south of India. And further to that, I was elevated, you know, into the Indian National Congress, which is one of the largest and oldest political party in India. And I represent the women's division. So I'm really, really happy that mainstreaming has happened for me. I'm considered a woman now. I represent gender justice issues, across platforms. I even address the European Parliament as a spokesperson. So I think it's been a great journey. And I think being in politics is a great platform, not just to just have a voice, but also visibility of a trans woman in politics changes so much perspective.
What was interesting to note is that your first party was the BJP. And given some of their very conservative outlooks, how is this your first step into politics?
See, as I told you, I never planned my entry into politics. Yeah. I was invited for a Women's Day function on March 8th, International Women's Day, to receive an award at the local BJP office in my state. And then when I went there, they said, hey, listen, why don't you head the women's wing in the state? And I said, I'll think about it. Even before I did any paperwork, before I got the identity card, before I got any membership number, the media splashed the news that I was part of the BJP. I was never really part of the BJP. I just had lunch with the leaders and received an award.
Okay.
So what's been reported in the media is completely false, because I was never a member of the BJP. Of course, I met the leaders. I had lunch with them. I had, you know, the most powerful leaders of the party took me out for lunch and gave me an award. But it was just an award.
Yeah. While on the topic of the BJP, would you like to move on to the our next hot topic in India, the transgender person's protection bill?
I have huge issues with that. I really think they grossly, it's obviously not, the amended bill is not yet passed. I mean, we've asked for amendments and the final bill is not yet out and not been presented. But the initial bill that the BJP authored was grossly in violation of human rights and dignity. They basically criminalized so many things that a transgender woman does. For example, living arrangements. And transgender women are not, you know, there are no reservations in jobs or medical subsidies or housing. And when transgender women are thrown out of home in India, they have no place to go, but other transgender women take them in and groom them. So that was being criminalized. There was also begging was being criminalized. And, you know, they beg out of joblessness. They beg up because of unemployment, because of hunger, not because anybody likes to get on the streets and beg for money. But transgender women are pushed to a corner without opportunity. So I feel without the government talking about opportunity or reservations in, you know, in housing, in education, in medical facilities, how then can transgender women, you know, have a dignified life? They're thrown out of home. They're left to fend for themselves on the street. There's huge sexual violence. So I really feel a transgender bill should talk about protecting transgender women and opportunities before criminalizing their lifestyle. And also, the Supreme Court of India has said that self-identification is very, very important to human dignity. So if I identify as a trans woman, I deserve to be known as a trans woman, and I need to have my identity cards made that way. But unfortunately, the BJP says you have to go in front of, the government says, the national government says, that you have to go in front of a screening committee which determines whether you're good enough to be a woman or a man or a transgender. And I feel that is really in violation of the judgment of the Supreme Court, which says self-identification should be supreme.
Is there any chance there's going to be self-affirmation in the Indian law? Is that an amendment that's at all possible, or is that for a future date?
The Supreme Court has already said that self-identification should be the priority, and that's the way forward. But the government in Parliament is still deliberating a very archaic transgender bill, which basically wants a transgender individual to face a district screening committee. So in every district of your state, you have to go to a screening committee where there's a panel of people who examine you. And I feel that's grossly in violation of human dignity, because I think I'm allowed to choose who I am and who I want to be. And I think that shouldn't be left for a future date. But unfortunately, the way the Indian government is dragging its feet on it, one can only wait and watch what the Indian government does in terms of self-identification, self-affirmation. It's absolutely in violation of human dignity.
Yes, absolutely.
Could you just spell out maybe one or two specific concerns within the LGBTI community that they have against the bill?
One is the transgender bill basically criminalizes a bunch of transgender women staying together. I don't think they can enter into family arrangements with any other couple, but when it comes to transgender, any families, but when it comes to transgender women, when they live with like three other or four other transgender women, they criminalize that. They say the transgender women have to live with families, and if the families do not accept them, they have to live in care centers provided by the government, which are basically like dungeons, which I think is unfair. I think adults should be able to choose their own living arrangement. I hope that is being amended in the fresh bill that they're going to present in parliament. The other thing that I have a concern with is when they criminalize begging, when they say transgender women cannot, you know, of course there's a lot of transgender begging, and I know it is a nuisance in a lot of cases, like on public trains and wherever else, but they have no other choice because people don't give them homes to live in, people don't give them homes on rent, they don't have any facilities to educate themselves and access jobs, and they're thrown out of home. So what do? They're prone to sexual violence, and they have to feed themselves. So they, you know, they ask for, you know, charity. I really feel that has to change with opportunity and not by criminalizing begging. I think we have to give them opportunity to transform their lives.
And I was just going through the bill, and I found there was a specific section where it says, if you want a gender certificate, which is based on the gender you identify, you need to have had surgery and then like a medical certificate and someone else who also confirms that all those details are right. Do you think personally that there should be a law regarding that? Like should it require
I really,
for them to
I have a very different There might be technical reasons to why the bill is asking for that, but mm-hmm. my view as being a member of the community is that when you are a transgender person in transition, it takes a long time for you to do your hormones, do your surgery when you're ready for it. But from day one that you pop that pill and you identify as a woman or a trans woman or a trans man, you need to be given the dignity of the gender you choose.
Mm-hmm.
I feel for them to say, you know, you go through that 5 years of hormones and you go through that, you know, another 5 years of your surgery and then looking convincing enough and having all the anatomy, right? And that's when I will determine whether you're good enough or not. I feel that's not self-affirmation, right?
Yeah.
Look, so if there's a young boy who identifies as transgender and starts his hormones, it takes quite a while for them to get to the stage of surgery. But you can't wait till that time to kind of tell him that you're a trans woman. No, he feels that way from day one, and that's something which is such a powerful internal emotion which you cannot deny.
India's first elected trans politician, Apsara Reddy, with us on Joy 94.9. The trans protection bill, look, right idea, perhaps not quite the right bill yet.
I haven't been following quite what progressed since we spoke to Apsara most recently, but I think there were a lot of concerns about how trans rights were being protected and actually some of the harms that the bill might cause and some of the discrimination it might embed.
And the trans community in India is actually quite visible and quite vocal. So I do hope that there is enough presence and support within the parliament to make these changes.
And I think from what I've been reading, I mean, it would be nice to have a whole program that wasn't talking about coronavirus, but from what I've been reading online in the last couple of days, the trans community and other vulnerable populations in India are being especially affected, which is sort of what you'd expect, is the people on the margins of society, the people are going to be especially impacted by coronavirus, which is a concern as well.
Indeed it is. Coming up, we've got some good news for the LGBTI people in Africa. You're on World Wide Wave.
Hi, this is Tara from the Fiji Women's Rights Movement on the World Wide Wave.
Trans service people in the United States military have had a roller coaster ride during President Trump's term with significant policy changes and confusion. Gabriel Silverman and Fiona Dawson said about chronicling the journey of a number of trans people serving in different capacities, including on the front line in the United States military. They tracked the journey from the huge progress under President Obama to a sharp U-turn under President Trump in a documentary called Trans Military. After President Trump's infamous tweet planning to ban trans people from any military service, the US military bureaucracy made statements that seemed to indicate they did not necessarily support the president's ban. We asked Fiona if they were surprised by that response.
Yes and no. You have to remember that a tweet is a tweet. So, you know, the tweet itself wasn't formal policy. You know, it was the president's opinion. And therefore, that tweet did not automatically change any policy or automatically put a ban in. And so what I've come to learn about the military is that it's very, very bureaucratic. And it's like you go by what is written in the book, in the policy. And so at that time, these leaders came out in support saying, you know, no policies have changed. You know, we stand by our pledge to, you know, treat all service members as equals. What's interesting is you'll see at the end of the film, General Milley is actually one of the top brass officials, the Army Chief of Staff, who our service members met with in the film. And General Milley had been rather skeptical and unsure and uneducated about the issue in the beginning. And our service members met with him, and it really significantly helped to change, shift his attitude. So while at the beginning, you know, we're unsure of how Milley feels, at the end of the film, after the tweets, he is actually one in the news media outwardly supporting trans service members.
Let's bring this back to the actual people now. Gabe, what is the experience of the people in your documentary of life in the military as a trans person?
Well, so I think that what's interesting about this experience and following them, the experience is that there's the political rhetoric and the day-to-day reality. At the end of the day, what the units are looking for people to do is to just do their job and do it well. And all four of our characters in the film had units that supported them, the people around them, their actual battle buddies, right? And to this day, I mean, Layla was eventually pushed out for various complicated reasons, but the three characters that stayed in, they were all promoted, and they're all accepted by their team members because they're exceptional at what they do. And this is ultimately what they're asking the military for, is to judge them not based off their gender identity, but on their job performance. And when that is done, you see that they can excel in their positions like anybody else. And that's ultimately what the units want. They want a meritocracy where the best and brightest rise to the top. And that's what trans service members want, too. I mean, it just comes down to not trying to put people in these boxes based off gender identity, but just seeing them as the complete people that they are.
Can the reverse be true, though, that if you don't have a commanding officer that is accepting, then life could be almost hell?
I mean, that's absolutely right. And that was the problem before, right? As you see in the film, like Logan was able to serve as a man in Afghanistan because his direct commander allowed it to happen. And what you end up seeing is that within the absence of good policy, there's a patchwork of how people are treated. And this is where it comes down to discrimination and bias. So, for example, Logan, a white male, is treated a lot different than, let's say, his wife, who's a woman of color. And that's why a consistent policy is required, so that there's equal treatment of people regardless of gender or race or any other factor, and really look at, can they do their job properly? So yes, there are experiences every day of people who are being discriminated against because of their gender identity, not because necessarily for policy issues, but because the commander don't understand it and they have a lot of control. And so what ends up happening is when you look at, if you were to do like a Freedom of Information Act request and see how many people were kicked out of the military for being transgender explicitly, well, that number might not be that high, because what ends up happening is commanders who want to discriminate against certain troops will find every other reason to attack them. They will find every other reason to discriminate against them, to push them out so that, you know, they make their lives a living hell. So it is true, the reverse can be true, and that's why we need consistent policy.
Fiona, is the experience different for trans men and trans women? Are they treated differently? Is one more accepted than another?
It's a great question, and one that we ponder upon a lot. I don't want to stereotype and generalize too much, but I will say that we do find that, you know, masculinity is really revered in the military. You know, you have to be the strongest fighting force. And so whether you're cisgender or transgender, masculinity is a valuable asset within the military. And so you do find that trans men typically seem to have an easier time than trans women when it comes to transitioning in that environment. Of course, you know, trans men, when they take testosterone, is much more of a powerful hormone than estrogen. And so your body changes, you know, much quicker, and you can become stronger easier. And so, you know, we have found anecdotally that our trans guys are having an easier time than trans women. But then also, I think that that's true for cis and trans women outside of the military as well. You know, we still see a lot of gender bias and differences in how men and women are treated differently in society per se, which is one of the important reasons from an advocacy perspective why I wanted to tell this story. Because I think when you look at how trans people can thrive and excel in their careers in the military, which is one of the most gender segregated workplaces you'll find, that there's no reason why we should be treating people differently in society as well.
What's the risk of trans people in being open about who they are? I mean, appearing in this documentary is putting them out there. Everybody knows the truth about them and who they are. What's the risk for them?
Yeah, so when we first did Transgender at War and in Love in 2015, that story focuses on Logan and Layla. And at the time, Layla was having a very difficult time within her command and was really close at risk of being discharged and being pushed out because of the discrimination she was facing. And what we found when that film came out, all of a sudden, her story was out in the media and everybody knew about it. And it ironically protected her for a short period of time because the leadership didn't want to draw attention to this person whose story was being so well received in the military to then suddenly being discharged. And they, you know, they didn't want to like face an extra outcry from that. So the service members that we've seen in our film, because they excel in their careers, they have been for the most part, supported by their leadership, that they have actually, I think they've garnered respect for having the courage to step out and share their story. But I will say that, you know, our service members in the film are part of a group called Sparta that has now close to 800 active duty transgender service members. And by no means does that mean that all 800 of those people protected and secure in their jobs in the same way. But, you know, they still find amongst their ranks that, as Gabe said earlier, you know, if you have a leader that doesn't understand what it means to be trans, that has their own personal bias, and now, of course, you've got the commander-in-chief endorsing discrimination and the discharge of trans service members, and that empowers leaders culturally to treat those troops less than. Why would they want to invest in their careers? Like, why would they want to promote them? Why would they want them to get further education if, at the end of the day, the commander-in-chief just wants to get rid of them as well?
That's Gabriel Silverman and Fiona Dawson, directors of the documentary Trans Military on Joy 94.9.
I think that was one of the documentaries that was at the previous Melbourne Queer Film Festival. Matt, what's happened since then? This is a story that you've been following a bit more than some of us.
Look, it's still one of those things where there's muddy waters. I think one of the really good things was under Obama's presidency, this mighty, incredible machine of the American military was actually able to change and to bring in policy changes and even, you know, some cultural changes to their massive organization. It's done a U-turn. It has, they are winding back all those gains. There's a lot of uncertainty if you're a trans person in the military as to whether you can be there, whether you can be there behind the scenes but not on the front line. It's going to take some time before they find, you know, how this goes forward, and, you know, who knows, there might even be a change of election at some stage.
So you think the cultural changes, they're not going to be, I mean, there hasn't been resistance because of the cultural changes that you mentioned happened. So it's probably a bit harder to wind everything back, isn't it?
Perhaps. I mean, I think the reality that Gabriel and Fiona were talking about was that if you're a trans person and you've got an accepting boss, an accepting leader, your life is pretty good in the military, or as good as any other person. If you've got a homophobic person as your leader, your life is hell. So there are definitely still people who think there is no place for gays or trans people or lesbians in the military. And as I said, it's such a big, massive machine to change that it will take some time.
But it's definitely been one of those couple of steps forward and probably a couple of steps backward now, one we need to follow.
Indeed we will. Coming up, we've got some good news for LGBTI people in Africa.
Hi, this is Max from Amnesty International speaking from Ukraine on the World Wide Wave.
Hello to all those people that are listening to us on the podcast. You can subscribe to receive all your podcasts automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwidewave, or you could go to iTunes or to Google or to Spotify or whatever your favourite podcast platform is.
It's International Trans Day of Visibility today, and we are showcasing some of the great trans warriors across the globe. It's quite rare that we're able to bring you good news stories about LGBT rights in Africa. But in the west of Central Africa is a country, after centuries of Portuguese colonisation, that has set about not just removing colonial-era sodomy laws, but bringing in new laws to protect the LGBTI community against discrimination. Amani da Silva is an independent trans activist from Angola. We asked Amani how this came about and how long they have been fighting for this change.
The good thing is that actually there was a bit of a misunderstanding in terms of the news, because what happened is Angola post-independence has never criminalized homosexuality. What the government has done recently is just to banish from the legislation, it was just an old law. It was pre-independence. It was from the colonial times. But in fact, the government has never judged anyone for same-sex relationship. And the bonus for us
is that the government now, it's they are working towards criminalizing any sort of act that, you know, LGBT phobia, if I can put it this way. So anything that violates the rights of LGBT people, then it will be considered a crime, which is even a better thing for us, because now we feel that the government is really focusing on the violence and recognizing that there is a lot of discrimination and violence that goes on within the LGBT community.
So having that that criminal offence for discrimination based on sexual orientation, did you know that was coming, or was that a surprise to you?
It was a surprise in a way of being so soon, because we kind of, you know, as an activist, I've had the opportunity to sit down with the Ministry of Justice and other people from the government, and you kind of feel that they are ready to listen. They've always been ready to listen to the issues, to the problems. Obviously, until we presented them the issues, they were not quite aware of what was going on. And it's something that, you know, there is so much more to be done and so much more to come. I'm very positive and I'm 100% sure that it will happen. But obviously, we just need to keep on working for that to happen, hopefully quite soon.
That was independent trans activist from Angola, Amani Da Silva, on Joy 94.9.
It's really amazing to see a country getting rid of, doing a bit of a tidy up on these laws. So there's no enforcement. There hasn't been for some time in Angola of these old, laws from 200 years ago. And so they're tidying them up. But not only that, they've taken the additional next step of looking at anti-discrimination laws, which is, to me, is a huge change for Africa. There's only a handful of countries in Africa that have, basic protections. This is really, going to perhaps catapult them to the front of the rainbow list in Africa.
I know that Ball, who used to be on World Wide Wave, would almost certainly highlight to us that Angola was not one of those British colonies, and so had a different set of sodomy laws than somewhere like India, which we were talking about before. And so the change we're seeing is in the countries that were not under British rule in the past.
It was Portuguese, though, so this was quite a lot of Catholic influence. So although you didn't have the Commonwealth approach to it, there was still a little bit of a Catholic. And I think before that, there was a fairly good acceptance in the tribes of bisexuality and homosexuality.
I wonder how much of an influence that may or may not have on other countries in Africa, i.e. if they can do it, well, why can't we?
Hopefully what we're seeing, the health crisis we're seeing at the moment, not going to overshadow some of these issues. It is an interesting thought that if a country becomes really progressive, hopefully the other will follow suit.
We've seen in many places around the world, gay rights is the first and the first barrier to break through, if you like. Lesbian rights, sort of in a similar vein. Trans rights, there seems to be quite a lag on. What do you? I mean, it must be immensely challenging for trans people. They go through their own personal journey, but in many of these countries, they actually need somebody to stick their head up and say, "I don't accept this. We've got to make change." And they really make themselves. They put themselves out there. They make themselves a big target, really.
I think you're right in terms of the target, and I think that's what they're putting themselves at risk for the benefit of the community. I think a lot of the time in the early stages, until the attitudes start changing, and I think we've seen that a lot in people being threats, death threats, and all those things that people talk about. So it is a dangerous position. And I think the warrior is a good description because at the front line.
I guess it's pretty easy for us to sit on the sidelines, in many cases far away from, you know, Africa or wherever, and sort of watch these things. It would be easy for, if rights have been achieved for gay men or lesbians, to just go, okay, well, we're done. What do you think the role is for people, for the rest of the rainbow community who have achieved a degree of rights, to then advocate and, you know, be upfront about achieving trans rights and equality there?
I think the moral responsibility is actually pretty strong. And it's the same in Australia, that I think we have seen in many respects the lesbian and gay and bisexual communities stand up for trans rights in, you know, in recent months. But I think we could do a bit better than we have been. And I think there's a huge amount of transphobia about even in Australia. But when you look at those countries overseas that don't really have significant trans rights or outright hostility towards trans people, the thing that is most concerning is their risk of violence and of murder. And we're seeing that in Africa, and especially we're seeing that in Central and South America at the present time. So I don't think, on the one hand, we can say, well, we should be doing everything possible to support trans warriors across the world. And yes, absolutely. But that is a very, very hard ask for those people. So I think our responsibility as gay cis men, in particular around, you know, the microphones here tonight, is to make sure that those voices get out there, and also to listen to them and make sure their voices and their points of view are widely heard. But we can't speak for them.
I think one of the, just thinking back of all the interviews we've had tonight, the traits that sort of make a trans warrior, a trans leader, tenacity, and none of the people that have that we've spoken to take a step back. They're not saying they're trying to fit in. They're saying, this is who I am. This is how I live, and you need to make a change. You need to change yourself, because I'm not changing. So that defiance and tenacity is such an important trait.
This is Douglas.
And this is Paula.
From Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation, keeping a watchful eye on LGBTI rights across Asia and the Pacific.
On the World Wide Wave.
A big thank you to our guest tonight, India's first elected trans politician, Apsara Reddy, Imani De Silva, a trans activist in Angola in Africa, and Gabriel Silverman and Fiona Dawson, directors of the documentary Trans Military. You can hear all the full interviews on our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave, or subscribe at your favourite podcast service.
And when you go to those podcast services, remember to leave us a review. It's always a good way for people to find what World Wide Wave is all about. Thank you for messages this evening on Facebook to Vandita, to Brenda, to Mickey, to Daniel and to Angel, and a heap more who have joined or interacted with us on Facebook this past week. That's W3Joy on Facebook.
And behind the scenes, thank you to our podcaster Peter and our social media master Dean.
For all the trans warriors around the world on this International Trans Day of Visibility, we'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave, or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.